Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to the great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here celebrating the greatest day of the week for him. Gets to chat with Justin and Randy. Justin, how are you doing?
I'm fabulous. Thank you.
Randy, how you doing?
I'm okay.
You're doing the Justin this week. I saw Justin brought up the energy. You know, I've been goading him the last couple weeks, and he brought his A-game. I can't believe you're not super pumped, Randy. We had the greatest episode of Game of Thrones ever.
Ever.
Like 24 hours ago. There's never been an episode as good as this episode, Randy. We had the Lannisters just fucking up everybody's couch. We got them doing everything. We got Cersei getting her hands dirty, her lips dirty, whatever you want to say. They're fighting off armies. They're burning ships. Justin, how excited were you for this episode?
I was pretty pumped. I wouldn't say it was the best episode, but I definitely enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, Randy, you?
I concur. I definitely enjoyed it as well.
Because of all the awesomeness.
I like... Okay, are we allowed to talk about it now?
Well, yeah, you can blow it up.
Spoilers
ahead.
Okay. I definitely liked how Euron Greyjoy was just sort of parading him around King's Landing, going as slow as he possibly can to get to the throne room. And then I liked how Cersei was so hell-bent on making Lady Martell just, like, suffer to the point where... She not only poisons her daughter and is going to make her watch, but she's also going to make sure she doesn't starve and says that she'll literally force food down her throat so that she can watch her daughter's dead body decay and rot right in front of her.
And then she told the guards to make sure they change the torches so she didn't miss anything.
That is what you call hardcore, Dave.
Oh my God! How can you not love Cersei? The Martells, the Dorns, and the Highgarden people all suck. And you know what? You know what Cersei did in this one episode? She took care of all of them.
Yeah.
Dorn gone. Highgarden gone. We don't have to learn brothers. Boring ass people. And she's partnered with the only Greyjoy that doesn't suck a penis. I mean, it looked dark for Cersei for a lot of episodes, and it's I'm starting to see daylight. I see the end zone, and I think Cersei might make it out of this season. I don't think they're setting her up for this monster fall. Randy, what do you think?
Who rides a horse into the throne room?
Euron Greyjoy?
Yeah, he's a rock
he's
star,
a
man.
Person.
Yeah. Like, I guarantee you, if he stays the night at the Red Keep, he's the kind of guy that would super glue the furniture to the ceiling just to fuck with them before he checks out.
Oh my God! And how good was Jamie's episode? Like, just like when Euron's asking her like how Cersei likes it and stuff like that, and he's just like, you tell every fiber of his being one to like just cut his throat, but he like had to sit there and like just suck it down.
I think it would have been cool if he would have taken his hand off and then smacked him with it, like in the cartoons when a Frenchman like challenges someone to a duel, just like take off the glove and then just slap him twice. That would have been fabulous.
Yeah, and then with Lady Elena, the old Highgarden lady, I thought his exchange with her, that whole exchange and like her death, I thought was like one of like the best scenes that we've seen in, you know, recent Thrones episodes. Just like with her it's her death scene and she totally wins. You know, she's gotten in Jaime's head. You know, showed that, put it in there that Cersei's a monster. Put in there that Tyrion didn't kill Joffrey like everyone thinks, and it just kind of stuck it to him. Can't believe it. I'm pumped.
Okay, so that's all the highs. What about, aside from Jon Snow magically arriving at Dragonstone just in the blink of an eye, he's got the fastest little rowboat in all of Westeros. So he makes it there, and they have...
Didn't you hear he said the winds were the winds were kind to him, he said.
Right. So a lot just happens really fast. And I think it's fantastic that he's already there, it bothers me that we had to sit through five seasons of just the slowest pace ever, to the point where it was magically the ninth episode every season where something actually happened. And it wasn't until season six when they cranked that shit in overdrive. It's almost like they were kind of maybe waiting for George R. R. Martin to just kind of pump out the books, but once they realized that that wasn't happening, then they're just like, to hell with it, we're going to make this go fucking Mach 5. You know what I mean? And that kind of bothers me. The slow burn for 5 years and then crank it up to 11 in season 6, and then now it's just like they're fucking snotty beating me twice last night and it was wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of... I think people who binge it later, who aren't watching it live like we are, I think the change is going to be kind of jarring to them. Like, they're going to come to expect a certain pace, and they're going to get not that pace.
Right.
But I totally understand what you're saying. I just think that... I think the only problem was is that we had the one scene with the bankers of Braavos to where Cersei gave, like, a date. Like, she said, stay here a fortnight. And so from that point on, there's this ticking clock to where you know that it's 2 weeks until she pays them back, and you realize that what happens with Jaime and at Highgarden and at Castle Rock couldn't have happened in 2 weeks unless there was some serious pre-planning. I can kind of forgive the Jon Snow stuff because the episode ended with Jon Snow like going, and then the next episode started. So we conceivably don't know how long it took, you know.
Right.
Jorah's all healed, so I mean it could have been a couple weeks.
That's
so,
true, but so that, my problem that I can, is yeah. my personal timeline, not necessarily right. The show's timeline. It's just irritating to me. I mean, it's still good, don't get me wrong. I'm excited that it's moving this fast. I'm more upset that I suffered for 5 years when it could have been this pace all along.
Right. That's kids my watching problem. It nowadays, they don't got to wait. When I was a kid, I had to wait.
This is like nanoseconds, as it were. So that's what irks me.
I think the waiting is a good thing, though. I think it helps build characters and kind of make the world a little bit more rich and developed. And if everything had gone this fast, number one, well, we'd be done with the series by now, I'm sure.
Yes.
But I don't think we would have really had the time to kind of pause and breathe and enjoy the way that we have.
Right.
And it may seem frustrating now looking at it, now that we're getting it, you know, full speed, but... I don't know. And regarding the passage of time in the show, maybe a fortnight means something different in Westeros than it does here on Earth.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's like,
I mean, it's
like
possible
two
that winters
pay periods.
Are for years.
Yeah.
I mean, their winters are for years. I mean, it's entirely possible, but I think that I think they're doing a good job. The only thing they're really speeding through is travel. You know, travel seems to be everyone's got teleporters, like you said, snotty beanbird twice. But they're doing a good job of lengthening out the actual plot, though. Like, you know, Daenerys and her council are planning all of these things, and then we're seeing them happen in pretty much real time instead of waiting, like, an episode for them to, you know, old Game of Thrones, they would have had that scene last week where they were chatting around the painted table, and then the next week, at the end of the episode, we would have seen that attack between the Greyjoys. But I'm happy with how the plot is progressing, but I agree that they have a fucked up sense of time. You know, Euron built those ships pretty quick.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, but...
Like, you just add water, and then poof, this capsule turns into a giant ship.
Right. I mean, we've been waiting... I mean, some people that have read the books have been waiting for 20 years for Daenerys and Jon Snow to finally meet. And I think there's maybe been some mixed reactions. I personally loved, like, all of their exchanges, because at first I was kind of taken back, like, why is he treating her like this? Why is she treating him like this? But then I realized they don't know each other. All he knows is that, like, her father was a terrible, awful person, and all she knows is that, like, he refuses to, like, be loyal to her after all that she's done across the sea and stuff like that. So once I got into that mindset and Tyrion kind of softened it, between the two of them, I was really enjoying their interplay together, and I thought that the opening scene where Emilia Clarke is just berating Jon Snow, I thought was one of the best Daenerys I ever had as someone who doesn't particularly like Daenerys. I felt her handling of Jon Snow was, you know, because there is that theory that, you know, she will eventually be the bad guy. She will be the Mad Queen. You know, we've seen fits of anger and threats, and it was good to see her in her performance. She had both that kind mother who just wants everyone to get along so she can, like, rule the people peacefully. And then she has that, fuck this guy, he's not going to bend the knee, I should just feed him to my dragon. So what did you think of that? Those scenes, Randy? Were you, as someone who didn't read the books, and, you know, you don't have, I guess, as long an investment, did it pay off for you?
I think it did. That's in an episode or in a season where it feels like things are coming at us very rapid. To me, that is where it seemed to slow down a little bit. And now, I think you did hit the nail on the head saying, yeah, these are two people that have never met each other before, so they do have to approach each with their own side very cautiously. But I don't know. It made me a little uncomfortable just because it did seem like a long, drawn-out interaction between the two of them. But then you have Tyrion there tying the whole room together, and it all pays off.
Yeah, it was nice to see Tyrion. He's kind of been like a prop the last lots of episodes. Mm-hmm. This was kind of like his really... We got glimpses of it last episode, but this episode we really got to see why we loved Tyrion. You know, he went over to Jon Snow and talked to Jon Snow, then he went over and talked to Daenerys, and he kind of repaired that relationship, and he did it with his dour humor, and he's like, I wanted to come brood, but I see how good you're brooding, so my brooding will look terrible next to your brooding. And it was great to see Tyrion back at his game. What did you, Justin, you read the books, what did you think of the final reunion, finally uniting those two?
Yeah, I thought it was good. It was pretty long, but I was totally okay with that. We waited this long for it to happen that it would have been absurd for them to cut their conversation short. So, and there was no music, really. It was just talking. It was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no underplaying music. It was just a very uncomfortable sort of meet cute, as it were.
Right. You felt like you were almost, like, there. Like, yeah. It didn't seem like you watched them. It felt like you were, like, one of the Unsullied without his junk, just sitting in the corner watching it.
Yeah, which I appreciate. I like that tension. I thought that was good. I mean, even Davos kind of filled in those blanks for us when he finally was like, you know what? Fuck you, lady. This is what he's done for Westeros.
Yeah, took a knife to the heart. And he's like...
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think he stopped him from saying that just because, like... We'll call it necromancy for lack of a better word, but that's just sort of breaking the rules against nature, and he didn't want to come off as like a creeper. Why do you suppose that they said that?
I think that he wants to keep that close to the vest just in general, but I think if you're going to ask for help defeating an army of the undead, coming out and saying that you may or may not be an undead
right.
is probably a deal breaker. What do you think, Randy?
Or he's just a humble guy and he doesn't want to admit that, hey, you know, I took a knife in the heart and I'm still here. You got your dragons, you're fireproof, I'm fucking knife-proof. Yeah. Not without the help of, you know, some wicked magic, but hey.
And it was totally like a scene out of Rocky where she was like, Daenerys Storm did like the million things.
Yeah.
This is Jon Snow. he's King of the North.
Yeah, like when Rocky tells Apollo Creed, like, geez, you got enough names? He's like, it's almost finished. The Count of Monte Fisto.
You were going to talk about Daenerys? Or not Daenerys, Melisandre?
Yes, because she gets even more cryptic than usual when Varys is like, you know, you can't stay here, you got to go. And she's like, well, it doesn't really matter because I got to die here. Like you, I have to die in this crazy country. Yeah. And he's like, what? Why you gotta, you're creeping me out a bit.
When he kind of set this. He kind of set up... almost like an evil Varys turn where he was talking about, you know, once us lowborn get a taste for power, it's like the lion getting the lamb. Mm-hmm. Like almost like Varys, you know. Unfortunately, Littlefinger seems to be withering on the vine right now. And it was always Littlefinger and Varys were like the two like schemers. You're like, oh, these guys are the best. To where Varys has really stepped up, and he seemed a lot more tan in this episode too. I don't know if you guys noticed that. Looked like he'd been sitting out with those dragons. But awesome. I really liked that exchange. I liked when Jon Snow and Davos were going up the stairs, and the dragons came and scared the shit out of them. And then I think that was a that was a good moment where Tyrion's like, I like to say you get used to it, but you don't.
And I thought about that too, actually, is do you think the dragon sensed that he was a Targaryen at all, or do you think it was just for effect?
I think it was just for effect. I'd like to think that it was because he's a Targaryen and that one day he will ride one of those beasts. But yeah, I think it was just kind of a way of letting us know that Jon Snow now knows that it's true. You know, they've heard about this lady with dragons, but it would be just as easy to dismiss that she has dragons as it is for her to dismiss there are White Walkers.
Right.
And this way, before he even meets her, he knows, like, oh, shit, there are dragons.
Right. Okay, so let's move up north a bit. Bran, does it bother any of you that he's just a talking head and that his really... at this point, it's like he's just there to say that Jon is really a Targaryen? Is that what he's come down to? Is he just a talking head that's going to eventually reveal that Jon is a Targaryen?
Yeah, it's not super interesting. There's a lot of theories going around that this Bran is every Bran, because there's like a million Brans in the Stark family. And so there's a popular theory that this Bran has gone back in time and has influenced all the other Brans, like the Bran to build the wall to stop the White Walkers. And there was the Bran that founded House Stark, you know, to be the Warden of the North, to help defend the North, and so on and so forth. And that he's actually gone all the way back, and it's him that is turned into the Night King. The Bran is also the Night King.
Oh.
And so it's, again, this is all wild speculation. There's not any kind of concrete stuff, but a lot of the fan theories out there revolve around Bran, because there's got to be, he has to have some bigger part other than just to say, oh, yeah, you're Daenerys' uncle or nephew, I guess.
Nephew, yeah.
Yeah, you're Daenerys' nephew. Don't fuck her. He's going to burst in like, no!
But Targaryens do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's okay. But I mean, so if he is all-knowing, is he too all-knowing to care about Littlefinger and Sansa? Or do you think that he knows that Littlefinger is trying to make a bunch of littler Littlefingers?
I definitely think he knows. I think he's trying to focus on like the big picture. Like he's trying to be like Jon Snow and focus on the, because I mean, even when he's saying he's sorry to Sansa that she had to go through what she went through, he was still detached. Like it wasn't like super sincere.
Right. He's like, other than you getting raped, it was actually a pretty sweet day.
You looked really pretty and the food looked good.
Fucking asshole, dude.
It reminds me of in Star Trek the Motion Picture, you know, that wonderful piece, the bald chick,
yeah,
whose name I always
forget. Oh, yeah.
She's starting to remind me of like just that all knowing, just
Asperger's,
like monotone.
Fucking monotone piece of shit.
His Asperger's is fuck.
Eager and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't really care, especially when Sansa's like, hey dude, you're the king now. you should be king, and he's like, no, that's not for me. But, you know, I guess Sansa was okay in this episode. I hate to give her credit, but she seemed to have Winterfell under control. But, yeah, I think we covered pretty much anything we missed that you could think of that was awesome.
So my buddy, Jason Jans, as it were, quick shout out. He sent me a text last week. I forgot to mention it. But he was saying that anybody that's ever grabbed Littlefinger by the throat dies. That being Rob and Ned, and John did that last week and we didn't talk about it.
That'd be interesting, because I remember in season one there was a scene where some of the Kingsguard grabbed him, and I'm trying to remember which Kingsguard it is, but they're all pretty much dead, so I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it was like Merry and Trent or something like that. That's interesting, but John's already been dead.
That's true. He's
he owes him. He owed him one.
Yeah, he's just a little further on the curve.
Yeah, no, that's a super interesting theory. We'll have to, if we ever have one of those previously on Game of Thrones, and it shows Robert doing it, and then him dead, and it shows Ned doing it, and he's dead, then we'll be like, oh, Jon Snow's in trouble.
Yeah, and what actually reminded me of it was that he had texted me saying that if Bran sees everything that is currently happening, doesn't that handcuff Littlefinger's ability to manipulate Sansa? And I remember to talk about it this week.
Yeah. The way I figure he's Bran's working is that he's working on, like, he's not working on a scale of, like, what's going to happen 10 years from now. He's working on what's going to happen, like, 10 centuries from now.
Oh.
And, you know, like, the death of his sister, while sad in the moment, doesn't affect the history of what's to come, sure, necessarily.
Sure. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember her. She got raped when it snowed once.
Yeah, but it was beautiful. It snowed.
What an asshole. I hate
Theon,
that kid.
Theon, you were there.
She should have, like, fucking wheeled him down a hill or something.
Right. Because she just left her crippled brother just hanging out with the tree.
Yeah.
I'll just hang out here for a little while longer.
She's like, yeah, you do that, fucker.
Well, the next episode, I think, is called The Big Tree. So maybe we'll see some cool stuff.
I doubt it. You see Danny flying the dragon.
Yeah. And then we saw, in this episode, Jorah's cured.
Yeah.
So I was assuming that was, like, Sam and Jorah were going to go to Dragonstone. But he's just like, okay, you feeling better now? Well, you're free to go. I'm going to go copy these scrolls.
Pretty upset.
Which I'm assuming is, like, a secret punishment, because I'm sure there's stuff that, like, he probably shouldn't be seeing, but the Maester's letting him copy them so he'll learn them.
Right.
Secret punishment or secret reward?
Sorry, secret reward.
Yeah.
And then, excuse me. We will be done with Game of Thrones on August 27th. So we're not even going to make it to September. The next week's episode is actually called The Spoils of War.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll have three more episodes after that. So four episodes more and we are done with this season. We are literally almost at the halfway point.
But now all the episodes are going to start getting longer. I know the last episode is right around 90 minutes, either high 80s, low 90s. The episode before that's in the low 80s, and the episode before that's in the high 70s. So at least the episodes are going to be longer now. And Alan Taylor, who directed Thor the Dark World, that masterpiece, but he also directed a lot of the first two seasons Game of Thrones episodes, like the one where Ned gets beheaded and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He's actually doing the penultimate episode, the second to last episode, you know, which is where everything usually, the shit hits the fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that they have some big shit planned for these supersized episodes of Game of Thrones. Yeah, it's going to be quite a ride.
So, since you mentioned it, I'm just on IMDb right now, and the next week's episode says 50 minutes, 5-0. Then the week after that, it says that it is 59 minutes. The week after that would be 111 minutes, and then the finale for this season, it shows 1 hour and 21 minutes.
All right. It was long episodes.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I just hope
this one's a little long, too.
Yeah, it felt long. It was longer. It's like 1 hour and 3 minutes. But if they make it to where they turn it into like Sherlock with 3-episode seasons and it's like they change it from 8 seasons to 9 seasons, I'm going to punch somebody in the dick. I can't imagine that they would do that since they have that new show coming out. Benioff and Weiss, that is.
Confederate,
yeah. So it sounds like...
And plus they have the spinoffs.
Sounds like they're going to be pretty busy.
Yeah.
Not to mention that... It's possible the talent is tired of doing this show.
Yeah, and HBO was real open that next season's last season, and that they're anxious to get some of these spinoff Game of Thrones shows off the ground that won't focus on any of the characters we know, so they won't have to worry about the same cast. And I could see them next year. They'll have Westworld. I don't think we'll see Game of Thrones next year, and the year after that we'll get Thrones. I don't think we'll get Game of Thrones in 2018. I think it'll be 2019. And then we'll get Westworld, Game of Thrones, Westworld, then the spinoff series and Confederate at the same time.
Ugh,
is my guess.
I hate that idea.
Even though everyone's already hating on Confederate, they don't even know what it's about.
Well, I mean, they do, in a sense.
Yeah, sort of, but nothing's been written. You know, it's not like HBO's going to make like some like pro-slave trade show.
Yeah, I've read some pretty compelling arguments on the internets.
There are compelling arguments on the internet?
Mm-hmm.
In between the dick pics and the cat memes.
Right, that's pretty much all I look at.
And the dick memes.
Yeah.
What can you do?
I don't know.
But we did get some good news, moving on from Game of Thrones, that with the big shakeup on the Han Solo movie, you know, they replaced Philip Lord and Chris Miller with Ron Howard. Everyone was wondering if Bradford Young, the very talented director of photography that was has already shot 60% of the film, was going to also be leaving, or if they were going to keep him on in his capacity. And Ron Howard tweeted out a couple pictures from the set, and Bradford Young is there, so conceivably Bradford Young has remained as the cinematographer. He's probably, maybe short of like Chivo and Roger Deakins, he's probably the best cinematographer working right now. And I'm really excited to see what we can do for Star Wars. And a lot of outlets, I don't know how they, if they got a copy of the script, like if it was leaked or something like that, but people in the know are saying that the script for the Han Solo movie is one of the best things they've ever seen in Star Wars. And if that's the case, then it almost gives credence to the fact that Kasdan would have wanted to replace Lord Miller if they weren't going by a script. But anyways, Randy, are you excited that Bradford Young is staying on as director of photography for Han Solo?
I am. And in my mind, it was never a doubt. I didn't really think about any of the department heads or anyone else really getting the boot in the big shakeup. To me, it just seemed like they needed to cut the head off the snake and stick a new head on there. But no, but
two
heads, I'm stoked.
Will grow.
Yeah,
but only one grew. They cut off two and one grew.
Well, it's opposite.
It was backwards.
And it was a ginger one at that. Yeah. But I think that's fantastic, and I too am very anxious to see what he's going to do in the Star Wars universe. One of the great things about Ron Howard having taken over Han Solo is up till Lord Miller were out, we didn't see any leaked pictures. There wasn't anything really put online other than that very first day of production picture that was put up showing the slate, basically. There was really nothing going on. Ron Howard has been really cool about giving us little sneak peeks. Maybe it's just kind of a shot of a busy studio, and off to the side of the screen you see a monitor, and in a monitor you see a Wookiee or something like that. You know, there's like little hints here and there, just giving us just a taste, you know, just getting
or the closet. Whose closet is this?
Lando. It's been pretty nice. Even the very first thing that he posted, his first day on, he posted a short video of him taking his lunch trash and throwing it into the trash can. And a lot of people have been speculating that that was an absolutely metaphorical message saying that they're taking out the trash and getting rid of all the bad baggage and moving on. And I kind of like that people interpret it that way. And whether or not Ron Howard had intended that to be his message, I think we received it loud and clear either way.
Do you think that the reason Ron Howard is showing stuff is to kind of like reassure people that like, hey, things are still going as planned, to where they probably wouldn't, even if Ron Howard had been there from the beginning, they probably wouldn't have released, because all they really released was that cockpit photo with everybody in there.
Right.
That they probably would have had the same thing, but now that they're kind of in damage control mode and they have to kind of like get back in our good graces, they're kicking up their efforts?
Yeah.
Or do you think it's just Ron Howard?
Well, part of it seems that like Ron Howard is really being playful with it. Maybe that's just his nature on set. I don't know. But you use the exact phrase that I was going to use, damage control. On the behalf of both Ron Howard, but probably more likely, you know, from his Disney overlords, that, hey, let's do something kind of fun and playful so people aren't concentrating on the negative and all this bad press that seems to be surrounding the movie. So I think it's a combination of the two. But getting back to Bradford Young, one of the great things that I've seen from some of those set photos is the fact that they're doing so much of it practically. Like, there's one scene where you see Lando in the cockpit, and they're making the jump to light speed, and you see, like, the hyperspace just lines kind of going by. They're projecting it on a wall very practically. And I think that's got to be so cool from a DP standpoint, you know, because it's so cold and impersonal when you're lighting a green screen or you're lighting a set or a subject against a green screen, but to actually feel like you're there, I think that can only help the entire cast and crew really be involved in it. And it just, it's a big testament to how much I like the practicality of those shoots.
When you say DP, are you saying double penetration?
Absolutely.
How does it keep the camera steady?
On a gimbal. Yeah. You ever see those big, like, Steadicam vests? And,
oh, yeah.
You know, like, big rigs that people hold that have all the little electronic gizmos on there that keep the camera steady? That's for while they're getting plowed from every conceivable angle.
Yeah. And they have one of those GoPro head mounts. Oh, whole thing is being shot with GoPros. GoPros and iPhones.
Actually, it's a chicken. Do you ever see that video with a chicken with a GoPro strapped to its head?
Yeah.
And you said it's like the original gimbal, and they're moving the chicken around, and the head stays completely still. And, like, it never moves, even though the chicken's whole body is being moved all around. It's an amazing thing that if it weren't considered cruelty to animals, damn you, PETA, we could just strap GoPros to chicken heads, and everybody would be making movies with lots of moving camera.
It'd be in every DP's bag of tricks. Bring me the chicken. Put the 50 on the chicken.
Put the 50 on the chicken. Oh, I love that.
I mean, Brad for Young has a very unique style. I know Justin wasn't a fan of Arrival, but he also did, you know, A Most Violent Year. He did Selma with Ava DuVernay. And I think it's really hard to replace a DP halfway through the shoot, just because then you either have to match everything or reshoot everything, because you can't really mix and match unless you get really, really close, and that's near impossible. And this way they're going to, you know, if they keep the same DP, same lenses, same cameras, same lighting, same lighters, it helps minimize the effect that Ron Howard's involvement would change. You know, it won't be as jarring because visually it'll stay the same.
To be clear, it wasn't the camera work that drove me insane in The Arrival. I thought it was just a boring movie. I like the room that they were in when it was showing the aliens. I like the ship. I like them driving to the ship. I just hated the story.
Have you seen the leaked pictures of Snoke, Justin?
No.
A bunch of pictures got leaked, not just of Snoke, but just a bunch of character pictures. And
really?
Yeah, the toys that are supposed to be released next month. By the time people are listening, it's next month, but in September for Force Friday, some stores have already put them out accidentally, and people have been buying them, and they're selling for ridiculous amounts of money on eBay.
I see his face damage.
I mean, come on, Justin, you work at a place, can't you hook us up?
The old man Luke figure, I swear to God, the head sculpt looks just like the dude. I swear.
This will not stand, man.
I could make a pretty convincing custom Big Lebowski action figure out of that.
I was pretty surprised about how Snoke looked. Snoke, the other ones they're fine, but the guards were pretty cool, but I was surprised at how human Snoke looked. I think you even said those exact words.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and kind of throw out a spoiler warning, because I'm going to give a verbal description a little bit more in depth. But yeah, we've all seen what the hologram looked like, and we assumed, at least I assumed, it would be like some gray, pale, ashy-skinned alien type. But it's the most pale white man you've ever seen. It's just all shriveled and sunken and got a lot of face damage, as Justin likes to say. But the most striking feature are these goddamn baby blue eyes that are just, they don't look like they belong in that body. Like Blade Runner style, just plucked his eyes out and just shoved it into his own head. It's the weirdest thing. I've seen this really interesting kind of meme going around on Facebook where it shows the little boy with the big eyes that Anakin kills in episode 3, and it shows like a photo progression. Okay, Snoke all fucked up, and then Snoke with, and like basically they mirror image the good half of his face, so both sides look kind of good and a little bit of hair on top, and then they did like, they photoshopped a younger version with more hair, and then it's got like this baby version. I swear to God, the facial features are, it's uncanny how much this kid kind of looks like he could be Snoke. And it's just a silly, stupid meme, and nothing really more than that, but
But yeah, and he's wearing this really opulent gold robe. I don't know. I don't know what Snoke's deal is, but I'm curious. I'm a little underwhelmed on one hand and super curious on the other.
If I could describe it, I would describe it as if Two-Face from the Dark Knight had sex with a scrotum.
Who are the guys that had the tigers in Las Vegas?
Siegfried and Roy.
There you go. That's he looks like a post-attack. Post-tiger attack.
It's the robe.
Yeah, it is.
Like, his neck looks like one of those, like the gnarled tree that, like, the three-eyed raven hung out in. Like, it's just like, I'm like, I don't even know what I'm looking at.
Looks like somebody put a lightsaber up to his throat, and it was, like, at a slight angle, turned it on, and it just came out his cheek, and then the hole never quite healed.
Well, I'm on a everything is linked to Grand Admiral Thrawn kick recently. We did a couple weeks ago with Grand Admiral Thrawn being in the Han Solo movie. So I reread the Thrawn novel because I was stuck somewhere where all I could do was read. I didn't have internet access. And in the novel, Palpatine's talking about this group that's from the unknown regions, which he seems to be afraid of. And Thrawn seems to have knowledge of them. And that's, at the end of the book, he sends him to Thrawn to the unknown region. Well, he sent after Rebels. Thrawn will go to the unknown regions to fight or come in contact with these people, which is why he's not around in the original trilogy. So I'm hoping that Snoke is the person that Palpatine was talking about, and that they're so to have more connective tissue to the original trilogy and stuff. So
you are dreaming.
I'm not dreaming. Everything is related to Thrawn.
I hope that's true. And being that Thrawn novel is current, like new canon, it's anything is possible.
Hear that, Justin? Anything's possible.
Possible, not probable.
Well, those are two different things. I mean, The Last Jedi is still so far away. I mean, we're still, what are we, and a half months?
Yeah.
4.5 months away still?
It's almost August.
Oh, my God.
We are hours away from August.
Oh, man, it's amazing to come faster. I mean, just like the lack of news is just like so. With films today, it's so reassuring that we're not hearing anything from Last Jedi, really. I mean, we're getting leaks and stuff, which are normal, but, every other big movie, all we're hearing about is fucking drama and reshoots and shit's going wrong and everything's terrible and the sky is falling. But, like, on this movie, nothing. There's one writer on this movie, Rian Johnson. There's one director on this movie, Rian Johnson. Everyone involved, except for Luke Skywalker, is super excited for this movie. And even Luke Skywalker seems to be coming around if he's not doing damage control.
I was going to say, there's your damage control word right there.
I'm with you, Justin. If Luke Skywalker, something happens, and it's not my Luke Skywalker, like,
Not even Luke Skywalker's Luke Skywalker.
fuck? I will leave our Disney studio press screening that we will be going to. I will just have to leave. I'll be like, fuck this, no. I'll be like, that loud asshole, and just be muttering the whole way out of the theater, motherfucking Disney fucking up this fucking fuck show, fucking A. And Randy would be like, I don't know this guy.
I do not know this man.
I'll be like, Randy, you coming? He's like, I'm
going
to
sink a little bit deeper into my chair and enjoy the rest of the movie.
And then I'll have to like wait outside and be like, oh, man, he was my ride.
Yeah.
It'll be awkward.
It can be one of those yo-yos with the a boycott sign out front. Not my Star Wars.
Yeah, ain't my Star Wars. I'll walk up down the line, all the people off the next screen like, motherfuckers killing Luke Skywalker. Motherfuckers.
Can you imagine? I would laugh.
I would just burn my bridges with Disney and just be like, motherfuckers killed Luke Skywalker. Don't see this movie.
That would be hysterical. I would just lose my shit. I would say, okay, it's all just fiction. It's Luke staring into the fire, watching his friends that have died, and he's just daydreaming.
That's what he sees when he's watching his dad burn on Endor.
Yep.
Looking into the flames.
He stood a little too close to the pyre and was inhaling some really wicked flames from the paint that Darth Vader used on his armor. He was huffing the paint and just, these are his fever dreams.
Can't do that.
Not good for you.
Ain't gonna be no huffing tonight.
Yeah. I feel like we've been light on Star Wars news lately.
Yeah, that's okay.
Like in this lull. So hopefully something big happens soon. We should be getting a new trailer. We'll probably get a trailer end of August, right before Force Friday, probably. Because Disney doesn't really have a movie coming out in the near future that they could put it in front of. But, yeah, I would say probably August. End of August, beginning of September.
So D23 was too soon to have a new trailer?
It was not.
Wouldn't that have been appropriate?
It would have. There was a lot of stuff they could have done in D23 for Star Wars, but I guess they wanted to... I guess they figured they had us all won over with that Avengers footage. They didn't need to give it... I wish they would have given us some footage from Han Solo or something other... I mean, the behind-the-scenes reels, it's fun, but, you know, doesn't quite get you as juices as the trailer.
Oh.
Or a clip. Yeah. But Thanos... He's going to be in Infinity War, speaking of that movie. And Josh Brolin let loose that Thanos will also be in the fourth Avengers movie. So Thanos will not be a one-and-done villain, which is good. And I think partially, you know, what you would expect. You would think that Marvel has a villain problem. People are already kind of down on Thanos. That maybe they can use this first one to make us really, really afraid of Thanos, and the fourth one's all about taking him down.
So it's going to have an Empire ending where the heroes are not in good shape?
Yeah, when they kill Iron Man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, relax.
I think he's the one. Someone big's got to go. It's either Iron Man or Cap. I think it's going to be Iron Man. Yeah. I think Iron Man... sacrifices himself for Captain America.
Oh my god. I would resent him forever.
Really?
Yeah.
He grew a beard. Just for you.
I know. I appreciate that.
I heard you like beards.
I don't. I'm not really maybe a Iron beard Man guy. Oh, see, that would be cute. I could buy that for $1.
Yeah.
It seems more believable. He's obviously taking a liking to Mr. Parker, and that would make sense.
We should take a liking to Aunt May, so we get more Aunt May. Ooh. I saw a fun meme. It was that Aunt May had the Benjamin Button disease. Like the first time we saw her in Sam Raimi, she was really old, and then in Mark Webb's Amazing Spider movies, she was Sally Field, and now she's young Marissa Tomei, to where the next time they reboot it, it'll be like, you know, Emma Stone. That's it. Man. Yeah. But I think that's pretty much it. Unless you guys got something.
I don't.
Not a goddamn thing?
I mean, I had that list from like 2 weeks ago. But...
Oh, yeah? You still have that list from 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was...
Did we already talk about the Bumblebee spinoff and I miss it?
No.
we didn't really. I figured nobody cared.
I care.
I heard John Cena was going to be in it.
Oh, what? Is he Bumblebee? Does he ride around with like the top down? That'd be kind of cool.
He's like, you can't see. Oh yeah, John Cena.
Can't see me.
I just wrote about this today. Yeah.
John Cena.
Haley you heard Steinfeld. It here first.
Yeah, Haley Steinfeld and a handful of other people, but it's going to take place in the '80s, which is kind of cool. Travis Knight, who is the owner of Leica, the ones who made like Kuba and the Two Strings, Box Trolls, you know, Carolina. This will be his first live action feature directing film. People love Leica. Leica's the new Pixar. Now that Pixar makes shit,
a Leica M7.
Exactly, Leica makes the movies that Pixar used to make before they made shit like Cars 3.
It makes Nikon look like a disposable.
Gordon Frommer. But no, we kind of skipped over Bumblebee because I figured you guys didn't care. But I'm excited because I think that Transformers could use a new direction. You know, it's been so uniquely Michael Bay for so long that not only do I think Transformers needs a new direction, I think Michael Bay needs a new direction because I like Michael Bay movies and he stopped making movies to make Transformers. Like I really like the movie Pain and Gain. Like I'm the only guy who likes it, but. I like Pain and Gain. I like the Bad Boys movies.
That movie sucks, dude.
Bad Boys?
Pain and Gain? I hated that movie. Bad Boys 2, you didn't like? I hate it. No. I like Bad Boys, and I like Bad Boys 2, but I hate Peter Pan. No, I hate fucking Painting Game.
Painting Game. That's a pretty strong word, Justin.
I know, and I'm told I'm not supposed to use it anymore, and I apologize. But did you know that Pamela Adlon, who was the voice of Bobby Hill, she is in this Bumblebee movie?
Really? I knew she was in it because I wrote about it, but I didn't know who it was.
Yeah, she's Bobby Hill.
Bobby. So what? Damn.
What kind of vehicle is Bumblebee going to be if it's the 80s, I wonder?
Well, Volkswagen.
Your classic Volkswagen?
Yeah, I bet. Oh, okay, because so. You guys both saw last night, right?
No.
I did.
Well, in a flashback scene when he's fighting Nazis, Randy?
Uh-huh.
Yes, you heard me right. When Bumblebee is fighting the Nazis at Churchill's house covered in Nazi paraphernalia, which got Michael Bay in a bunch of trouble, he was a gray beetle. Or gray Volkswagen Bug.
Which is historically accurate because those were built. The Volkswagen is basically the people's car, directly translated or something like that. And it was built during the Nazi era.
Yeah.
In fact, there's even some interesting historical photographs of them being used as German officer staff cars.
Hmm.
Like the convertible Volkswagens.
Well, Bumblebee was that kind of car that transformed into a robot that killed Nazis. It was like the Inglorious Bastards of robot cars.
Killing Nazis.
Yeah. But Michael Bay actually shot that at Winston Churchill's former residence, and he put a bunch of Nazi flags all over the place. So people who are fans of Winston Churchill did not think that he would have approved. But I heard he was kind of a cocksucker anyways.
What's with all this Nazi crap? Like Steve Martin said to... What's her cheese? Who's the lady that always gets a nomination?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep, that's it.
Yeah.
That's a nice house.
You know, Meryl,
what's all this Nazi crap?
See, the Oscars are fun.
Yeah, I think Steve Martin is hysterical.
He is. He's kind of going away. I think he's silently retired. I don't think he's officially said he is, but yeah, he's one of the greats. I'm hoping that someone pulls him out of retirement for like one last great role. Like Spielberg wanted Gene Wilder for Ready Player One, and there's a part that's perfect for him, but obviously he was too far along in his battles to do it, but it would have been that topper on an amazing career, and I hope that Steve Martin gets that because his later roles, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what his last couple things were.
He's in that long walk of Billy Lynn's long halftime walk. He was in that.
He was?
Mm-hmm.
He was. He played Norm. Well, all right. Well, never mind. Forget everything I said, but
I already did.
Yeah, but hey, you got that list? Is it relevant? Is it awesome? Is it amazing?
Well, it was relevant last week because we were celebrating Wonder Woman being the highest grossing film of the summer and being the highest grossing film from a female director, which is...
I like it.
That's a double whammy. But this particular list was inspired me to come up with the most underrated box office flops. So good. Ooh. Movies that made no monies.
Like John Carter of
no.
John Carter of Mars.
False. Not good.
John Carter rules.
The only thing is I forget where I got this list from. It's not necessarily my list. It was from
you're
one of
pawning
those...
on someone else's list.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where it's like clickbait, and then you click it, and then Looper. It was off of Looper.com is where I got it from.
All right, it's right here. I got it.
I mean, I have the numbers right in front of me. I just couldn't remember where I got the list from. Like, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't my list per se. Although I will agree with a lot of movies that are on this list. There's a handful on here that I've argued tooth and nail for the whole world to go see, but it's still struggling. Time will tell on these ones. But coming in hot. These are in no particular order per se, but they're all worth mentioning. First one was Edge of Tomorrow, a.k.a. Live, Die, Repeat, which originally was called All You Need Is Kill. That's what it was based off of, the manga. So this is a movie where no one even knew what the hell it's called. So aside from being just a botched market job, no one saw it. It was with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt, and it was the Starship Troopers meets Groundhog Day, and it was a lot of fun. And I think all three of us have seen it. Is that correct?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Love it, right?
I loved it.
Absolutely.
I was the asshole who had to convince people because I saw it like early, and I'm like, no, it's good. I swear you'll like this movie. And they're like, I'm not going to see this movie, David. I'm like, all right, this movie's awesome. You're going to, a month from now, you're going to be like, saw that movie, David. You were right.
Yeah, that was good. I went drinking before I saw it, which might have helped, but I enjoyed it nonetheless. Plus, that was one of Bill Paxton's last real big movie roles. He was perfect for that role. Next one on the list of most underrated box office flops would be Dread with Carl Urban and your girlfriend Cersei Lannister. She's kind of got the meth mouth face damage thing going, but she's still smoking hot. This movie is a lot like the movie The Raid, but with more bullets than kicking. The Raid was sort of a martial arts movie with a lot of kicking in a building, and this one is a lot of bullet fire in a building. Fantastic. Loved every second of it. I believe on the 2012 recap episode for Geek Legacy Podcast, that was my most underrated film of the year, was Dread.
And this was the opposite of Edge of Tomorrow. This was one you were telling me, like, it's really good. I'm like, no, it's not possible. And then I saw it, and it was good.
It's fantastic. Some of the numbers say that it had a budget of $50 million, and sadly, it only made $35.6 million. But this is that one that sort of gained a lot of ground after it was released on home video. This was sort of that word-of-mouth, dark horse, cult classic type of deal where everyone that saw it loved it. Unfortunately, me and five other people were the only ones that saw it in the theater. Sad. I know. Next on the list is a movie I actually haven't seen, but it's in my Netflix queue. Zodiac. This is one that has like Robert Downey Jr. and...
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal. I was going to say Bubble Boy. Sort of dealing with a serial killer that's still got a cold case going on. It's open. Case is still open. It's pretty sad. Of course, this movie did actually make more than what it cost. It's just with the star-studded lineup, they thought it would make a tad bit more. It brought in $84.8 million versus a budget of $65 million. It's always kind of weird when something sort of underperforms. You think it's going to be lightning in a bottle, but... someone forgot to cap it.
Yeah, I think it boils down to that Fincher is not for everybody. Like, I think that Fincher makes amazing films, and I personally have loved almost every single one of them, but he makes films that my wife doesn't want to see and my mom doesn't want to see. He makes very stylized, very good-looking movies for his audience. Mm-hmm. And almost he's almost like a more niche Christopher Nolan, in that he kind of has carte blanche, he has final edit on all his films, he cuts his own trailers, he always works with the same composer and like Trent Reznor, and I think that it was silly for them to give him such a large budget, but when you have Mark Ruffalo, when you have Jake Gyllenhaal, Rob Downey Jr., Brian Cox, and all the other people that were in the film, I guess that's where the money went.
Mm-hmm. And it, those of us that have seen his catalog of movies, it's pretty obvious when you walk into the room and you see that it's definitely a Fincher movie. You're like, wow, this, like how you identified Nolan with Dunkirk. You were like, wow, this is a very Christopher Nolan film, right? His hands all over it. I feel that David Fincher is definitely the same way. Like, you could walk into, if I didn't tell you that he did Alien 3 and 7 and fucking Girl with the Dragon
Fight
Tattoo,
Club.
Fight Club. They're, in a way, all part of the same collection. They're all different pieces of art, but you can tell it's all from the same artist, you know. It's interesting how it works.
Fincher's interesting. Like, usually I don't like his movies the first time I watch it, But, like, I'm conditioned that if I watch them a second time, like, I like Social Network, like, I couldn't stand it the first time I saw it. And now it's, like, one of, like, my favorite movies that's on TV. Like, if it's on, I'll watch it. I just love it. And, you know, same thing with, like Gone Girl. Like, you would think that once you knew, like, the twist, it wouldn't be good. But he creates just such a layered film. You know, even going back to his days of Seven and Fight Club and Panic Room and, you know, The Curse of Benjamin Button and stuff like that. So I really like how he makes films.
All right. That's fair. Next on the list is Hugo. Did you see Hugo?
It sucks.
It's not terribly good. What's funny is it felt so strangely familiar to me, and I was like, why do I feel like I have seen this before? But then I realized, as I'm watching it hits me like a fucking bucket of water, that it is basically, you see the movie that's being made that was from that Smashing Pumpkins video, Tonight, and right. I'm like, oh my god, I've fucking seen this before. And then that's when it like clicked that it was Tonight, and I was like, holy shit.
Like A Trip to the Moon or something, yeah. Like Here to the Moon.
Yeah.
From the Earth to the Moon.
There you go.
I was like, holy shit.
Where they shoot a bullet into the eye of the moon.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, why'd you do that? His eyes all closed. Stupid. But yeah, I wasn't particularly a fan of this. It was, I guess you could say it was visually stimulating, but it wasn't necessarily my cup of tea. It was $185 million versus a budget of $170.
Yeah, and it was all like the, you know, the aesthetics of it.
Sure. Visually compelling, but not for me. Maybe if I was a child. Let's see. Next on the list is The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. I actually hated this movie. I thought it was so long and so fucking boring. I literally wanted Robert Ford to shoot me as well. I literally couldn't stand it. And
yeah, it's like 3 hours.
It's a long one. But it just wasn't good. And it made $15 million versus a budget of $30. So somebody lost their job on that one. That's a shame.
Yeah.
And you
know, not the director, because they let him make Killing Them Softly,
which
like,
is
a couple years later.
I would say it's actually worse. Which I didn't even think was possible. That movie was garbage.
The good thing about Killing Me Softly is it's short. That one's only like 90 minutes.
Oh my god, I hated that movie so much. It was like, so I Redboxed that movie, and the second it was over, I wanted to throw the disc across the room, but I didn't. I put it back in its case, and I immediately returned it because I didn't want it in my house anymore. I hated it so much. I was angry. You ever watch a movie and you're just angry that you wasted your time with it? I should have stopped it. I don't know why I didn't. I hated it. The worst.
And it's got an amazing cast. It's got Brad Pitt. It's got Ben Middleston. It's got James Gandolfini. Yeah. It's got Ray Liotta. It's got Sam Shepard, which unfortunately just passed away today. So, I mean, it's got a pretty stellar cast. But no. Yeah, not into it.
That sucks.
Okay.
Hate it. Next on the list is The Road with Viggo Mortensen, where he and his son are just traveling across the country in a post-apocalyptic world. And it's the kind of movie you want to have the suicide hotline on hold for. It's very depressing. There isn't a single uplifting moment in this entire movie until about 8 seconds before the credits start rolling.
Right. Once he dies, basically, spoiler.
You're like, oh my god, I can breathe now. There were some pretty freaky deaky moments in this movie. When they were at that house where they were clearly eating people, that was pretty fucking gnarly. I didn't like that. Next on the list is Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. This movie sort of snuck by me. I didn't see it until years later. Were you a fan of Master and Commander with Russell Crowe?
Yeah. I was lukewarm. I saw it because Randy and I worked on this like film in Mexico, and they had just wrapped shooting Master and Commander because they were shooting it in the Fox Studios in Mexico. And everyone in the town was talking about was how Russell Crowe got kicked out of Mexico and wasn't allowed to come back. Uh-oh. And so out of curiosity, I watched the movie. And I mean, it was fine. It was during like Russell Crowe's like heyday of like, every movie I make is this massive, epic movie.
Yeah, thanks, like Gladiator and shit.
Yeah, and it was fine. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like the one of the greatest like flops you have to see, but it's a passable movie.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I barely remember it. I caught it like on Stars or HBO or something, and I was walking in and out of it. I wasn't terribly blown away. But I'm not really like, short of like the first like Pirates movie, I'm not really into ship movies. You know what I mean? Like I can't relate to them in any way, shape, or form. So if it's not fun, then I'm probably not going to like it.
You're not a nautical kind of guy.
No. I have zero interest. Unless it's like the Swiss Family Robinsons or fucking the first pirate movie, Curse of the Black Pearl, I'm probably not interested in it. I'm shallow.
Yeah, it's okay. Just remember, port and starboard. Port is left, because port has four letters, and left has four letters. You're welcome, Internet.
Wow, mind blown. next on the list is a fun one, Speed Racer. This is one that I've talked about to death, so I'll keep it short, but it is an incredible movie, visually stunning, and it's just a lot of fun. There's so many races that just sort of take your breath away, and the final little bit when he's just trying to figure things out in his life and just he's just racing for the pure joy of it, it just almost brings a tear to my eye every time I watch it. And I'm a sucker for motorsports, and as absurd as this movie is, the Wachowskis literally turned a Japanese cartoon into a live-action spectacular, and it is incredible. Especially if you were to watch it today on your super mega screen at home in the Blue Rage and it looking glorious, you will have a blast.
Yeah, I think we used the word criminally underrated probably more than we should, but this is definitely one of them because no one gave it a chance. Like, so many people just dismissed it out of hand, like, this is going to be terrible. And, you know, they heard all the rumblings of how much it cost to make the movie and all the problems on the set and this and that and the drama with, you know, Larry transitioning to Lana during the production. And in the midst of this, it's this beautiful, like, family story. Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually highly emotional. Like, as Speed Racer is racing, like, you're flashing back to moments in, like, his life. And it's like, you really, really care about these people. And like Justin was talking about how visually beautiful it is. I think Justin said it like years ago that like every Blu-ray player should come with a copy of Speed Racer so you can show your friends like, this is why we have a Blu-ray player for this. And it's just stunning. And it still holds up. I watched it like 2 months ago and it still holds up.
Oh, man. When someone tells me that they haven't seen it, I will pop it in and we'll watch it. I've every time I've seen it, it's been with someone watching it for the very first time. And it's great to see them be like, man, that movie was really cool. And it's like, no kidding. It cost $120 million to make, and it made like $4. So, yes. Criminally underrated indeed. Last on the list is The BFG, which I know you tell me to watch it, but I haven't. And I'm sorry. This movie didn't make its money back, but I think they expected a little bit more. It was 180 versus 140.
Yeah, I think they expected more because it's a Spielberg film. And I've been on my soapbox for a while now with Spielberg that he's in the process right now of making some of his best films he's ever made, which is saying something because of his filmography with Jaws and Jurassic Park and Saving Private Ryan, E.T., and every movie from our childhood. But
except for Close process. Encounters. I hate that movie.
Yeah, I'm not a big Close Encounters guy. But he's in the process now of making these amazing films, and he's not trying to be Steven Spielberg. Like, you know, during the 80s and 90s, he was trying to make these iconic, set-piece-driven, just blockbusters. And now he's trying to tell these amazing stories. He's almost getting back to his, like, Schindler's List roots, as silly as that sounds. And he's making stories about people. It's not about the spectacle of a shark or this giant, how cool this dinosaur looks, or, you know, recreating this Battle of Normandy. He's isolating these character moments, and he's telling these very intimate stories, but on this grand scale because he is Spielberg and everyone wants to work with him. So Tom Hanks will come out like Bridge of Spies is like, everyone bitches that there are no movies for like just adults. You know, the adult drama is dead. You know, with the exception of Fincher, who we just talked about, who's not for everybody. Nobody's really making these like mid-team, like $50 to $70 million dramas for adults that we want to see. That was like the hallmark of like the '80s and nineties. But Spielberg is making those now. He made Bridge of Spies, and you know, he made Lincoln. And I know you haven't seen either of those, but they're incredible pieces of filmmaking, and they're definitely worth checking out. And they're just, I think you make the claim that all John Williams' music sounds the same.
Oh my God, it's the worst.
And so, but I think it's because you're only watching like John Williams in like Spielberg movies and Star Wars. But now that he's doing Lincoln, he's doing Bridge of Spies, he's almost like created this whole nother like sound for himself, and it's more muted. It's not these trumpets like. He's got this beautifully powerful like underscore to, kind of like his Schindler's List score. You know, it's not out there. It's not these trumpets and trombones and stuff like that.
like my buddy Bill Conti, he's into the trumpets. Exactly.
He definitely is.
Oh, I love it.
But you did skip one. I don't know if you did it on purpose or you.
I did. Oh, yeah, Tomorrowland, you're right. That broke even.
Fuck that movie.
Yeah, you were so pumped about this movie, Randy. Do you remember, Randy, when Dave just couldn't stop talking about Tomorrowland, and he was like, oh my God,
it's gonna be
the greatest movie ever made. I was so excited. And then, like, as soon as he gets out of the theater, we get a text like, I don't want to talk about it.
I was so heartbroken. Because I was like, it's amazing. It's this mystery box film. And they're not giving anything in the marketing. Like, you don't know nothing about this movie. Everyone's going in blind. It's going to be like The Matrix all over again, where we don't know what we're getting, but we know it's going to be cool. And then I realized the reason we didn't see anything is because nothing happens, because this movie's terrible.
That's a shame.
I would say that probably the most sad I've ever been leaving a movie theater.
Oh.
And that's counting, I had to walk out of the theater several times after Han Solo died.
Oh. He might survive. Fine. Skeletor lived when he fell all that way and landed in the water there.
Yeah, he did. Of course, into the bottomless pit, you mean?
But then he didn't get exploded at the end either. So, yeah. I guess even if Han survives the lightsaber attack, survives the fall, he still gets exploded.
The planet did explode. That's kind of a triple whammy.
Yeah.
Any one of those three will kill him.
Sort of like a Final Destination scenario where you just can't cheat death.
Yeah. I just can't catch a break. My kid goes evil.
That's a shame. And it all started with him leaving the hyperspace in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You just can't do that.
Like, Abrams, are you even trying to keep science here?
Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to. Christopher Nolan didn't.
He didn't.
He broke science.
Don't know who I'm mad at. That is a fine list, Justin, with the exception of Tomorrowland.
And Master and Commander.
And Master and Commander. And The Road. I don't think I can ever watch The Road again.
Oh, yeah. That was sad. I like how... Who was it? Charlize Theron? Was she the one that was in that movie?
Yeah, she's the wife.
She just packs up and leaves. She's like, even this movie's too depressing for me. She just walks out the door, and we never see her again.
Like, later...
Yeah,
it's like, it's a Coke. Drink it. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even this movie. Like, it's just, you just feel so sad. Like, it's like, I give Walking Dead shit for being a joyless endeavor. This is like, just, it's like a dementor of films. It just like sucks all the joy out of the room. And it's terrible because Viggo Mortensen is giving an amazing performance. Like he's great, but it's just, the movie is just so hard to watch. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Viggo Mortensen, did you guys ever see Captain Fantastic?
No. I heard good things about it, though.
Is that the one where he rides a horse?
It is not. That's Hidalgo. Captain Fantastic was the movie that was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actor last year. Basically, he's a single father of these four kids, and he decides to raise them like off the grid. And it shows them, like, their life. But he's still got a family that lives, like, you know, normal life. And so every so often he'll go to visit them and stuff like that. And so it becomes this struggle of them looking down on him for, you know, don't you think your kids need X, Y, and Z? And don't you think they need, like, the proper schooling and stuff like that? And it's got some really great child performers. I mean, Viggo Mortensen is obviously great because he's great in everything. I won't tell you his name, but they call him Strider. But he's really good, and it's definitely worth checking out. I don't know if it's on Netflix. I caught on a plane ride, so. But it's definitely worth checking out. That's my recommendation. Captain Fantastic.
You got it.
Yeah. Anything else, boys?
Nope.
I'm going to kick dragons next episode.
All right, ooh, bring them to you.
Shit. By the way, Pixelated will be back this Friday. We were out for Comic-Con, and then this last week, things happened.
Right. It's so funny because I've had a new theme for, like, for a while now, but I still, every time I start, I go, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, I start humming the Mega Man theme. I'm like, oh, wait, no, wrong. That's right, I forgot.
Yeah, we don't want to get sued.
I just don't want to get sued. But awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Make sure to go to geeklegacy.com for all of your geek news and reviews. And whilst there, listen to the aforementioned Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Stephen K. James talking video games. And make sure you like us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, and we will see you guys later. See you on another time.
I was going to say that. See you on another time.